Hey, Dennis.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing good.
That's good to hear. Well, PBR fans, I'm your host, Porter Chappelle, and I have a guest today. Would you like to introduce yourself to everybody?
Yes, my name is Dennis Davis, and I am the new owner of Dennis Davis Bucking Bulls.
Okay, and could you describe what happened, you know, leading up to you now taking over what was the James Gang?
Yes, actually, the James Gang is a buck and bull training program, and its sister company was Exclusive Genetics / Buck and Bull Games. And what Exclusive Genetics and Buck and Bull Games did, they would promote events, put on events for the customers or the bull owners of the James Gang. Well, the Exclusive Genetics and Buck and Bull Games sort of just kind of come to an end, which was owned by Billy James. He just got to a point in life where he wanted to do something different, and he offered the James Gang, which is the training program, to me. I ended up being for the last five or six years. Passionate about it. I love going to events. I love meeting with the customers and training bulls. Required it to just kind of keep it going.
Okay. And what made you get into bulls?
Well, you know, I've always, I come from a rodeo family, not necessarily rough stock. My uncles and aunts, ran timed events, barrels, and things like that. And, it's funny, one of my cousins called me the other day and he says, "Man, congratulations. On your new venture." He says, "I just thought you were just crazy when we were all little, when all you talked about was bucking bulls." And I actually couldn't remember back that far, but evidently I've always had a passion for bucking bulls. And I mean, as soon as I was able to kind of walk, and you know, I was being put on sheep, calves, and then eventually steers and bucking bulls. And I rode bulls well into my 30s. And after I had to retire from that, I just wasn't done yet with the bulls, so kind of here I am, you know.
Yeah, and for those who don't know what the James Gang did, could you describe it to them?
Yeah, what the James Gang was, it's very similar to the horse racing industry. What we would do is just say if you wanted to own a bucking bull, you're a PBR fan, CBR fan, or just a bucking bull fan, and you wanted to own a bucking bull, but you lived in an apartment complex, so of course you couldn't take the bull home with you. So you would hire someone like me, and I'd be considered as a trainer to take care of the bull for you, which include exercise, nutrition, keeping up with events, helping the owner enter the bull in competition events, and hauling those bulls to and from buck and bull competition events.
Okay. And for you, how long in a day would it take you to train, you know, that day's worth of bulls?
Just on the average, it's really about an 8-hour day. My days are pretty long because of the amount of bulls and the amount of things that I do with bulls. On any given year, at the beginning of the year, we may have 300 bulls in the program.
Okay.
And going through those 300 bulls, you know, there are a handful of bulls that have certain problems that are different from others. So as time goes on, we group those bulls into groups according to, you know, their problem and their issue. So on a Monday, we may work on maybe 40 or 50 bulls that have a problem with moving forward in the bucking chutes once they hear the latch. And on Tuesday, we may work on 40 or 50 bulls that have a problem with jumping up and down in the chute and just basically just kind of going crazy. So the days can kind of fluctuate. We can have an easy 8-hour day, or maybe even a day like today. You know, when I'm done here, I'm gonna get back to it.
Yeah. Well, your days sound like that they're always busy, basically. How many events would you say that you send bulls for people who can't be able to send them off themselves?
There's so many. I can tell you, last last year, 2017, I was actually home 4 weekends the whole year. And when I mean 4 weekends, that's 4 weekends to where I had an opportunity to ride my motorcycle, and I was just home doing nothing with bucking bulls. And so nearly every weekend of the year. So that's 52 weeks in a year. So at least 40 to 45, you know, events.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's two or three events going on the weekend, but yeah, and nearly every weekend of the year, there's somewhere to go.
Wow. Okay. And for you now being the new person over the company, what steps are you looking to take forward into, you know, improving the business?
Well, one thing that I've always thought, or I thought maybe we were missing, I guess, the boat, for lack of better words, in giving some owners an opportunity to take bulls to the PBR.
Yeah.
We've had Derby bulls and Classic bulls. So, yes, we are at the PBR per se, because we paid an entry fee and we have a 3 or 4 year old that we're trying to win money. But the 5 year olds, you know, the big time bulls, the really good bulls that you see week in and week out.
Yeah.
We sort of in the past have kind of stayed away from there because we just kind of felt that it just wasn't economically, you know, feasible. We could go to a PBR and it may not pay the fuel tab, you know, to get there and get home. But that really wasn't the case. There are some individuals who want their bulls at the PBR. You know, they want to see their bulls, you know, buck on television. I don't want to say at all cost, but, you know, at a high cost. And I'm extending that opportunity to those people when we didn't do that in the past.
Yeah. So I used to watch the CBR, and basically that's basically the PBR, but you could say on a lower level.
Well, you know, I think on the outside looking in, that's what it really sounds like.
Yeah.
But what it is, it's actually two different formats.
Okay.
And it's really equivalent to, if you look at motorcycle racing, for example, you have motorcycle racing on a track.
Yeah.
Where these guys are going in circles and they're going hundreds of miles an hour.
Yeah.
But then you have a dirt bike track. Mm-hmm. Well, it's still a motorcycle. It's just two different types of races. At the CBR, the format is bull score plus the ride time. So if it's bull score plus ride time, I want to bring a bull that's somewhat rider friendly, because if the cowboy rides my bull for 8 seconds and I bring an average of an 85 point bull, that's 93 points to my average for the team, which is where we made a killing being able to manage and select bulls that way. But on the flip side, whenever I go to the PBR, that's a whole new ball game.
Yeah.
It's based on the individual bull score. So now I want to bring out the 90-point bulls.
Yeah.
Because if I bring out the 90-point bulls at a rider-friendly event, they may one jump a guy, and he rides them for 1 second. That's only 91.
Yeah.
Where the 85-point bull got ridden, and he was 93. So okay. There's a strategy, and it's just sort of two different things. And it's really it's just a matter of what you like. Some people really like the arm-jerking rank-type bulls that we see in the PBR, which I dearly love.
Yeah.
But then I also like a really good spur down, too, on a rider-friendly bull.
Oh, yeah. So it's basically the PB. So there aren't really, you can't really compare the two, because they are both mainly focused on bull riding, but the two different events for the bulls.
That's correct. I mean, it's like oranges and apples, because there's a different format. I mean, when I go to a CBR, I purposely leave the 90-point bulls at home.
Yeah.
So the cowboys can ride. Now, when I go to a PBR, I'm going to take a bull there that a guy can ride for maybe 1 or 2 seconds. So that'll give the judges the opportunity to see that he has buck, kick, spin, and intensity.
Okay. And, for example, like the events mainly for like just like the younger bulls, like the BBI and that kind of stuff. Do you bring both of those kind of bulls, or one bull over another, or?
Well, you know, actually, I love, you know, the futurity is what you're talking about. The ABBMI, when we're taking the yearlings, which are the one-year-old bulls, and we have the futurity, which are the two-year-old bulls. I particularly like those because I like to see a calf hit the ground from his mom. I put my hands on that calf, train that calf, raise that calf, and see how he turned out the buck. So, in other words, I get to keep up with that calf's lifeline. Some make it, and some don't.
Yeah.
So it's pretty interesting to, you know, I mean, that's a pretty interesting event also. And I particularly like the ABBI futurity because 9 times out of 10, it comes down to the efforts that the trainer put into the bull.
Yeah.
You know, because the dummy that's strapped to him, the dummy is not going to come off until after the whistle. So there's not a, did the rider ride well enough? Did the rider pull too much rope? Did he not pull too much rope? Did he ask him at the wrong time? Everyone has a fair shot. So I want my bull in tip-top shape. So I'm going to work with this bull week in and week out. So when he gets to an ABBI event or to a futurity event, he's going to stand there in the chute. And when the gate cracks, he's going to turn out and spin right there in the gate and hopefully win some money, as opposed to going there, getting freaked out by the big lights, turning over upside down, expending all of his energy, and not getting very many points.
Okay. I totally see that. For you being a trainer and being a part of this program for as many years as you have, how do you feel that the bull riding world, or more or less the bull world, has changed over these past few years, or decades rather?
Right. I think the way it's changed because people are starting to, or for a long time, I mean, they started just kind of getting their behinds kicked when you start coming into these futurities. So they're going back home and regrouping. And I'm not necessarily speaking over a weekend, but over time, they're going back regrouping. They're going back and looking at the cows, for example, and see what bulls to put on those cows that kind of worked. And cow A may have produced 5 bulls in her past that were really, really good. Cow B may have only produced 1 bull in her past. So they're going to get rid of cow B for time on cow A and try to get as many good bulls as they can. So now we're looking at a potential 5 really good bulls as opposed to just 1 really good bull. And I said that to say, I remember back when I was riding, we would go to an event and we would all just sort of pray to get the best bull because there was usually 1 or 2 just really, really good bulls. And then the other bulls were so-so. Well, nowadays, when you go to an event, you'd be hard pressed to find a sorry bull.
Yeah.
Everything's good.
Yeah. So for you being a trainer, have you ever done like the, how you could say putting bulls and cows together part of things, or is that somebody else's job?
Yes. Yes. We also do that because, and we've also had some clone cows. We've had some cows that are proven, and what I mean by proven, have had some really good bulls, have produced some really good buckers, you know, in her past. So what we do is just go and basically just duplicate her. We'll clone that cow, and we use this process called in vitro fertilization, where we would go in and gather eggs from her, as opposed to her just having one bull from natural birth. We will go get her eggs and maybe get 10 eggs from her, fertilize those eggs with a particular bull semen and create like 10 embryos and put those 10 embryos in recip cows. And since the semen is sexed, 99% of the time I'm going to have 10 bulls come out as opposed to just putting a bull on a cow and hoping out of that cow for the year.
Yeah. So, and I'm not to get off topic, but for cloning aspect of things, for like, do you guys also clone the bulls, or is it mainly just the cows?
It's mainly just the cows, because what I've found that the success of the bucking bulls is really just come from the cow.
Yeah,
there's some pretty good cross. For example, Houdini in the past, when someone wanted a good spinning bull, they would put Houdini semen on their cows, and they would produce some pretty good ones. But for the most part, some of these big-time bulls just weren't really good producers. I mean, you take, like, Bodacious. There were thousands of Bodacious sons out there and maybe 1 or 2 reputable-type bulls.
Yeah.
And, you know, the same with Bushwhacker. You know, I mean, he has a really good name, and those bulls are still pretty marketable. And there's a couple out there that I know now that are pretty decent bull. One being really, really good that belongs to Cody O. But for the most part, they're just bulls.
Yeah.
So what I would do, I would take something like Bushwhacker's Mom, go in and get her eggs and try to create 5 Bushwhackers. As opposed to trying to take Bushwhacker's dad and put him on 5 different cows.
Okay. So, and then now for me, that was just a little side question, but I'll get back on topic. When you put a cow and a bull together, do you want a bull and a cow that can buck at great speeds, or is it mainly the bull you want to buck at a decent level, or the cow you want to buck at a decent level to give that pretty good chance of the offspring being good bulls or cows?
Well, it's mainly the bulls. If I'm in the when I'm in the sales, it's gonna I kind of use my selection with the bulls and on producing cows. And I'll give you an example of matter of fact. When I told you I was going to meet you at 6, up until almost 6 o'clock, I just finished pinning a bunch of cows, and I had 2 what we call cleanup bulls out on those cows. Now, all these cows were AI'd, which is, you know, artificially inseminated earlier this year, but every now and then that doesn't always work. There's like a 10% chance that doesn't work. So there's going to be some cows that are running around out there that are not pregnant and not getting ready to have a baby. So what we'll do is put some what we call cleanup bulls on there, so hopefully she can get pregnant by those bulls. Now, those 2 cleanup bulls, we make sure that those are really good bulls and maybe some crosses that we just want to try to see if they work.
Okay. That makes a little bit more sense now. With you moving forward with the bull aspect of things, going towards, as you said, more of the PBR level, for like the PBR ABBI championships and all that stuff, would you then put more time into the ABBI events, considering that they lead to the, you know, the PBR's events in Vegas, or still spend your fair share with this with, you know, the stuff they have going on now, and then and then work your way slowly, depending on, you know, who the owners are, towards getting the bulls to the PBR level?
Right. So what I'll do is I'll focus, and I will actually continue to focus on the ABBI, because like I say, last year I was home only 4 weekends. So the majority of those events were ABBI. And I think myself, like every contractor and every bull trainer, wants a bull to ultimately get, you know, to the PBR.
Yeah.
And so while I'm raising these bulls and taking them to the ABBI, if I see the potential, once these bulls are 3-year-old, they're just kind of kept around and bucked here and there to focus on, or that's the plan, so they can focus on to go to the PBRs. But then there are some customers that say, Dennis, I want to go to the PBR right now. So what I'll do, the next event I go to, if I see a bull that's really, really good, I may go up and offer the guy and say, hey, I know somebody who wants this bull. What do you want for him?
Okay.
And if that bull is sold to me and he's PBR quality, then we can enter the PBR that way. That's one of the options, like I said, that I'm actually offering, because, I mean, I'd love to put a bull on some cows and know that 5 years from now, that calf is going to be a PBR type bull. But that's not reality, because there's only 1% of the bulls that hit the ground every year even are PBR capable. Or, you know, they're able to go to the PBR.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, going forward with that, when you go to these events here and there, do you go as a trainer and a person who's there for your bulls, or go there as a trainer and also somebody trying to find new bulls to get for your customers?
Mainly just as a trainer. Because I rarely have, you know, customers wanting or looking for other bulls. And just every now and then someone may come up and say, hey, you know, look, I'm ready to step it up. I've got a promotion at my job. I want some better bulls. But that's sort of rare because, like I said, we didn't do that. We never offered that in the past when it was the James game. So we rarely, you know, would see something of that nature. So now that I've opened up that option, customers may come to me and I may start looking a little more for potential bulls to add to my program. But for the most part, I'm going as a trainer, focusing on the bulls that I have and the bulls that I've been working with and the customers that I have, and go try to win.
Yeah, because, you know, the end goal as a trainer or as someone who owns a share or the full bull is to win. And for you being a trainer, you know, certain bulls are better out of the left or the right, and, you know, some are decent out of both deliveries. How do you find a bull that, well, hang on, how are you able to see which delivery is better for the bull? Because, you know, some bulls have off days, and some bulls are just, you know, daily consistent. So how do you find a bull? What? How can you spot which delivery is best for that bull?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, most bulls, you know, a very high percentage, 99% of the bulls have what we call a lead. It's either a left lead or a right lead. And it's like if you're standing with your feet together and someone asks you to walk forward, you don't consciously make the decision that I'm going to put my left foot forward or my right foot forward. It's just whatever your body feels, and you're going to step forward with your left or your right. Well, bulls, when they're bucking, they have that same type of lead. So I watch their leads, you know, and there's an indicator because I start everything on the left.
Yeah.
All bulls start on the left. That's just a good place to start. And sometimes they go out there and they'll spin right, but they have a left lead. They still have a left lead. So they get left on the left, you know, or remain on the left. And if they have a right lead, I'll put them over on the right to try them. And sure enough, they're right there. You know, they're right there in the gate for the most part.
Yeah. Okay. For you, you know, with the leads and all that stuff, because, you know, certain bulls, as they get older, change up their game and, you know, how they buck. Well, not all the bulls, but, you know, a decent part of bulls change as they get older. Do you then change their delivery if you still have them, or mom, do you kind of just leave them in the same delivery as they were?
You know, I'll change their delivery just to see how it works. You know, I'll give you a good example. We have a really good bull called Rock Solid, and this Rock Solid our customers bought from Cody Lostro a few years ago, and this bull, we started out bucking this bull on the left, and he would go left.
Yeah.
Then after, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 outs, he would go out one jump and come around to the right. So quite naturally, when we started to see that he gravitated toward this right lead, I moved him over to the right. But the weird thing about it is that he would buck right there in the gate, but he would always score higher on the left side going right than he would on the right side going right. So we leave this bull on the left.
Yeah.
So when he comes out to the left, he takes one jump and comes around to the right, and he is really bucky, and that's where he's received all his high scores from.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I said that to say that, yes, some bulls will gravitate to change deliveries, and then some bulls, you may need to leave them on that delivery even though they're going the other direction because they score higher.
Okay. And then, for example, you know, I'll give you an example of, like, a PBR bull, Airtime. You know, he was in the left-hand delivery, and, you know, the bull was – consistent here and there. You know, he would have some outs that are 47, some outs that are 43, and some that are in the middle. And then his owner changed him to the right delivery, and he had more, you could say, consistent outings on the right side delivery, but they weren't as high scoring as they were on the left. Would you, as a trainer, or, you know, somebody, would you consult the owner or the, you know, shareholder of that bull to say, you know, the bull's consistent out of this delivery, but his scores aren't as high as they were in the other delivery?
You know, exactly, because that is exactly what happened with this one particular bull that we have. And especially if there's a competition going on, I mean, it's like bull like Airtime, he's running for like bull of the year.
Yeah.
Or Futurities, if a Futurities at an event, of course, we paid an entry fee and we're trying to win money, then you want to kind of, you know, consult and everybody get on the same page and let's try to do what's best for the bull. Where does he score the most points? Because the more points you score, the more money, you know, that you're going to make.
Yeah. Okay. And what age for the bulls do you kind of just, you know, say we don't have the space to continue to keep this bull and buck the bull?
Well, you know, it's, you know, some bulls never make it to their 2-year-old year. Some bulls will quit when they're one. So it's just really a matter of when they quit bucking and just don't want to be a bucking bull.
Yeah.
So whether if that's, if he's a 2-year-old or if he gets to be 6 or 7, I mean, we have a bull now called Flap Slap.
Yeah.
Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. He's a great bull that I've taken to, you know, many, many CBRs and won tons of money with. This bull, he's going into his 8-year-old year, and he is still kicking butt. I mean, he is still pretty good. And when I say kicking butt, no, he is not a 47-point airtime type bull, but he is like the perfect rider bull. This bull will always be 86, 87, and sometimes 88 points, and he's rider-friendly, so the guys will ride him. So I'm going to always get a 93 or 94-point, you know, score with him, and here he is almost 8, and he's still going good.
Look, yeah. So, because, you know, with the PBR, as you said earlier, the category of, you know, winning money with the bulls changes with that.
Yes.
Because, you know, in the PBR, as bulls get older, they either increase or they decrease or they stay about the same. And with increasing, they would go from being a long round bull to a championship round bull, or from being a championship round bull to being a long round bull and all that kind of stuff. Would you, because, you know, your goal is just to, you know, put yourself with the, we'll eventually get into the PBR. Would you then kind of talk to the owner or, you know, a shareholder about, hey, the bull's either slowing down or stepping up, you know, I would need you to either take them or keep them from me, if you get what I'm asking?
Yes, you know, and that's absolutely right, because I do that a lot. If I feel that that bull is no longer competitive, I won't require or ask that owner to continue spending money, and I guess in a non-competitive ring. That's also, you know, I have to keep track of stats and see what events are scoring and what they're averaging. And if I know if I've got a 88-point bull and it's taking, like in Bordertown, Missouri, it's taking 87 or 88 points to be in the money to even win a little bit. Well, if I know my owner's bull is only 86 or 87 points, I'm going to go to him and says, look, we're not competitive. It's going to cost you $1,500 in shipping to go up there. It's a $500 entry fee. You know, you stand to lose $2,500 off the top, and this bull can't even place on his best day. So it's up to me to kind of keep up with that, with those sort of statistics, so I can pass that on to the shareholders.
Okay. And because, you know, for example, Bushwhacker as a yearling and so-and-so, the bull wasn't that rank. Or, you know, for example, Bodacious, as they were younger, they weren't as, they didn't show the potential as they did when they were, you know, in the bigger lights, you know, you could say. With you being a trainer, would you then, you know, still hold on to the bull, thinking or hoping that you know, there's still a possibility of that wow factor? Or tell the shareholder, the owner, hey, I'm gonna need you to, you know, take the bull because he's not winning money as of now.
Right. Well, you know, what I would do, and I've actually had to do this, and I had this conversation with some shareholders that are potentially staying with me, is it's if it's economically feasible and I can see some up the road talent in a bull, I'll advise them to say, look, we need to turn this bull out for, say, a year.
Yeah.
Or just do something small with them. Let's not run up a whole, you know, thousands of dollars on entry fees trying to make this bull competitive. If it's economically feasible for you, let's hold out on this bull. But if you don't want to spend the money to wait on a chance, then we can go ahead and get rid of this bull now. So I just sort of kind of put the ball in their court, but I'll give them my professional opinion, for a lack of better words, on whether I think the bull may be good later down the road or not.
Okay. I get that. For you, how long again were you with the Drains game before, you know, Billy stepped down?
Right. 6 years.
Okay. And so that's basically like the 2012,
Correct.
You know, that area. For you, were you there, I guess I could say, for the bulls that are now high quality or, you know, decently competitive bulls? Or back then, were there, well, from then to now, with those high quality bulls not, I guess you could say, bucking under you or like in that same area?
I think the bulls, the quality of the bulls had gotten better because at that time there were embryos being created out of bulls like Chicken on a Chain and Bodacious, the Cartel Bull, and that's why it was named Exclusive Genetics. And what we found out is those genetic crosses with those bulls did not work. So we started looking at the cows and also going out to other breeders and purchasing like their whole herd and then just picking out the top one or two bulls, you know, out of that herd. So thus statistically making an overall better performing program.
Okay. I have like another one or two questions, and then, you know, I'll, you know, let you finish what you're doing as of now. But for you, you know, going up with rodeo and like all that kind of like more or less country type feel with the bulls and livestock and all that stuff, how have you felt that the rodeo world has changed from when you were riding to now, like the mainstream of it?
You know, I think from the competition standpoint, the quality of the rough stock has definitely gotten better. That's not to say that we didn't get on any rank bulls back then, but there's just more rank bulls now. I'm a terribly, you know, busy type person. I don't go out much or get a opportunity to be kind of in the mainstream of the Western world other than just running behind bulls, or either they're chasing me, you know, most of the time. But for the most part, that's what I can see the difference. It's extremely competitive, thus making it a really good, you know, a broader fan base because of the excitement and the wow factors.
Yeah. And for you, you know, being a trainer, and you know, you needing bulls that can get higher points, the point difference to me, you know, watching old videos in the early 2000s, in the 90s and the 80s, those riders riding those bulls for high scores, and nowadays would be, you know, lower scores. How do you feel the bull or the judging level has changed throughout those years?
Well, you know, I think the judging level has changed because of the pressure that's actually put on the judges. That's one thing I love, every aspect of this Western culture, bull riding, rodeo, except I do not think I'd ever be a judge. To me, that is the most difficult job, I guess, in the operation right now.
Dennis, you cut out real quick.
I'm sorry. I had to get out another call.
You're fine.
Get rid of another call. So it's easy once you go to an event and there's one or two really good bulls. It's easy to mark that bull first and second place. But then when you go to a bull, like we have the American Heritage, when the best of the best is going on and everybody, you know, the pages are bringing their bulls. I'm bringing some bulls. You know, just everyone's bringing really good bulls. And if you're a judge, it's very difficult. So I think the judges, the pressure's on them, and they've had to actually step it up a bit. And not that they were not paying attention to the bulls then, but there's so many good bulls now that you really have to find something wrong with the bulls so you can kind of effectively place these bulls and score them right.
Okay. That was perfect. Thank you, Dennis, for your time tonight.
No problem, man. Thank you. Just anytime you need something, just let me know or give me a call anytime.
Okay. Of course. Well, PBR, the whole entire bull riding world, this has been Porter Chappelle and Dennis. Dennis, I would like to say to the more years ahead of this new program you're, you know, starting with, and I hope the best for, you know, everybody who's involved in this ride.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, and I will talk to you, I guess, you know, later down the years.
Sounds good. You take care.
Thank you. You too.
All right.
Bye-bye.